Hey everybody, Raphael Harry here. You're listening to White Label American. On this show, we dive into unique and diverse origin stories from immigrants and allies. Join us weekly as we break barriers, connect the past with the present, and peek into the future. Welcome to an illustrious episode with an illustrious guest of White Label American, and I'm honored to be joined by a returning guest today. Now, technically, this is the third time because, you know, for those of you on Patreon, you've already gotten that episode that had everything crashing. However, I'm honored to have my illustrious brother here again. Thank you for giving me your time, and due to my due to my carelessness, thought about today, I had AFCON 1 week from today on my calendar. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what was going on with me. I thought AFCON was starting next week. And then, my Google alert went off. Opening match is on Sunday. I said, opening match of what? I said, oh, snap. AFCON starts now? Man, life is life, man, everything. And just before even this recording began, somebody already texted me, are you going to do a live show for Nigeria's match? I want to watch that. I was like, well, you could have signed up for my Patreon and given me some money, you know. So with that being said, support this show so that I can do live shows. And if you want me to, you know, do a live talk on Nigeria playing at AFCON or any country, because you know I love multiple African countries. If you have the video, you see that I'm wearing it's different green with yellow, which means it's Teranga Lions I'm representing on this recording. I can do that. So support me on Patreon or just go on the website, whitelabelamerican.com, and donate. With that being said, welcome to the show, Mr. Baudelaire Zeus. How you doing today, my brother?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
yes, I'm glad to be here too. And please let the people know about this awesome project that you have going on. Mm-hmm. And yes, where they can find it. Let's start there.
Yeah, so my show that I'm currently working on is called The Voodoo Project. And basically, it's like a re-examination of Haitian voodoo from its path from West Africa to Haiti today. Right. And kind of really checking to see if voodoo is what we've been taught it is by the West. Right. And pretty quickly we find out it's not. But what is it actually? You know, it's not the demonic, witchcraft or whatever that we were taught, and that I was taught, even as a Haitian, amongst Haitians. A lot of Haitians even think that voodoo is that's like wicked and malicious thing. So anyway, yeah, that's basically the show. It's an 8-part documentary series of me, you know, documenting my learning about voodoo from day one, which was like a couple years ago, all the way till today.
And anyone who hasn't listened, where can they find this project to listen to?
Mm. So the pilot episode of The Voodoo Project is the only episode I'm releasing before the whole thing is finished. The pilot episode you can find on the Pitch Party feed. So just, you know, anywhere you get your podcast, look up Pitch Party. It's like a red cover, and then The Voodoo Project is on that feed.
Yeah, I've listened to the pilot episode, and I highly recommend everyone checks it out. Everyone hearing the sound of my voice, check it out. I mean, whatever misconceptions that you had of fears, it's a good place to start.
Yeah.
And it will make you look back on whatever that made you feel like, oh, this is something that doesn't belong in my life or I should be afraid of.
Yeah.
It will make you look back and say, why am I afraid of it? Why is this scary?
Exactly.
And that's why your project is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's voodoo is very African. You know what I mean? It is our connection. Especially throughout the diaspora. Of course, voodoo is in Benin, of course, but throughout West Africa. But the versions that we see in the quote unquote new world, right? In New Orleans and Haiti and Cuba and all these places, Santeria in Cuba, Candomblé in Brazil. All of that is our, meaning diasporic Africans, our maintenance of that connection to home. You know what I mean? And the connection to our spiritual base back at home. So
yes,
the show, you know, thank you for what you said about episode one. I've worked extremely hard on this show because it is such a personal story, as well as like it's so important culturally, of course. Like I'm mainly speaking to Haitians, but the story is meant to resonate with all African people wherever they find themselves. You know what I mean? And being able to decide, you know, who tells us who we are? Like, how does someone get that power? Like, we give them that power, right? You know? And then once we give them that power, we allow them to make us scared of ourselves.
Indeed. Because when I was listening to you talking to people from your Haitian community, including your family, and their response, listening to their responses, I could replace each person with a member of my family, with a friend from a different tribe, and even other Africans from different parts of the continent, be it north, south, west. And each person had mad similar reactions when I just thought about asking them. I just left this topic in, I guess, in limbo. One of the areas I'm just like, I guess I don't need to know, since I'd mentioned living in Benin City for a couple of years, for almost a decade. And we knew what we knew there. But there are people, everybody has their own practices. You know, for most Nigerians, we call it juju.
Yeah.
And it has a negative connotation. But when push comes to chase, there are times when everybody has a story of juju had answers.
Turning to it, yeah, absolutely. That's the same thing.
There's, you know, I know people who were on deathbed, and it's like, well, a juju man has answers, or a juju woman has answers. Now you're staring death in the face. People like, if you save me right now, I'll take it. And then after they found, you know, after they bounced back, then it's like, oh, you know, well, I went back to, you know, whichever religion they're from, and the big two, which is always Christianity or Islam. Then it's like, oh, no, that wasn't it. And I'm like, okay, but I remember, so, you know, this memory started coming back. And when I asked people, you know, my mom, you know, was like, oh, I'm not, she kept deviating from the answer I was looking for. And then the different story that I wasn't even aware of came out, and I was like, oh, it's not the story I was looking for, but okay. And it was so funny how it happened. But it wasn't that she, probably like 10 years ago, she would have said, what are you trying to, what is this, the devil sending you? But she didn't go that route, which I was like, okay, this is good. Yeah. But at the same time, I just found it fascinating that there was an admittance that, yeah, something happened at one point in time. And then I asked another cousin of mine who, funny enough, we hadn't spoken in years, and she just reached out, hey, I just want to say hi. I was like, oh, I remember this incident when some money disappeared in the house and everybody in the house was taken to this juju man. And I was way too young to be a suspect because I wouldn't know what to do with the money. That was the only reason why I wasn't taking. And she was like, oh, yes, I remember, because she's way older than I am. And she was like, yeah, I can't remember what that man did. But the person who was revealed as the culprit, he was given a second chance, and then he stole again. And he was banned from
And the juju man house. Knew who it was.
He revealed the guy. When all of them were there, he revealed the guy. And when he came home, there was like a silent treatment. But I remember his mom begging, like the mom was embarrassed because himself and his mom were guests in our house. I can't remember his name. My mom mentioned his name because that's what I brought up with my mom. And my mom was like, wow, you can remember stuff, because she's almost 90 now. And she was like, you, this this boy, you can remember things. I can't remember that you recall that story. I was like, that was one of the most legendary things that ever happened in my life. How will I forget? So she wouldn't admit that they went to that Jew man's house for that money to be revealed. But she remembered the story, everything that happened that got him banned the second time when he stole. Because that was like a Hollywood movie, how he climbed up the window, because we were living in a semi-duplex that was attached to the next, a semi-attached duplex. And he climbed up and stuck his hand through the window. But a younger aunt of mine was taking a bath, and she had the door open. There was a mirror, and she just saw a hand stick out from the window and lift out a necklace from a luggage that my mom had kept the necklace in.
Yeah.
And she had a band of cash in there, but his hand couldn't reach the cash, so only the necklace that he grabbed. So she went on detective mission. My aunt, who was taking a shower, who saw the hand and tracked this guy. And she was like, you must hand over what you stole. And he was like, oh, please don't reveal that I did it and all that.
Yeah. But
that's how, you know. But as a kid, I was so fascinated. Like, man, this guy climbed all the way, but you know, not social media, nobody with cell phone cameras back then. This was early 90s. So after that, I've never seen this guy again. Like, probably might have run into him at a party as a young
adult. You wouldn't recognize him, though.
But I wouldn't recognize him, but that was the ban. I remember his mom crying, saying, oh, this guy embarrassed me. So my mom, when I brought this up, my mom is now revealing how apparently the guy had a record of stealing at multiple houses, but the juju man never met this guy before. He never knew him.
Yeah.
Well, she wouldn't admit that first incident when everybody was brought to that guy's, the juju man's house, and there was something that happened. But I've heard a different story from years ago that it was like, have you ever heard of casting lot?
No.
In the Bible. It's in the Bible. Somebody was trying to disparage that juju man way back. This was like early 2000s, and tried to say, oh, what that man did was just casting lot, and that's how he was able to trap the guy. But how did he cast lot? Anybody who's listening and knows what casting lot is, please write in and let me know if you've ever used that to trap somebody in something. But it's in the Old Testament. I can't recall right now what they've used it for in the Old Testament, but there's a way it was used to reveal certain things, like in a group of people, and it revealed, I think even in the New Testament, it revealed somebody who did something wrong. And it's coming back to me little by little. But he did a set of things, and it revealed the person who pulled it was either like, I think the one was like, he gave everybody like little sticks. And the person who pulled the shortest one, it's like everybody pick sticks there, like broomsticks. But they're all the same. They're supposed to be the same size or the same length. But one will be the shortest, and the thief will pick the shortest one. Everybody will pick the same length, and the thief pick the shortest one. And then it's like, let's do it. They'll do it again. And he scatters everything. But it's like, to everybody, everything looks the same length. Only the thief that will see the one that looks different. But everybody, even the thief will see everything as the same length. And it's like he picked the same one. And they did it like a couple of times. And the guy kept picking. He just kept going back to that same.
Yeah.
Same, no matter what he tried. If you put it in a bag, you put it laid flat in a row. Then, so it was clear that, man, you're the guy.
Yeah, man. It's
the guy.
It's crazy how powerful, you know, our, I don't even want to say native, or like our ancestral traditions were, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's been a lot of, throughout this journey, I feel like I've been in a lot of situations, even to be honest with you, even like the making of this show has been like magical in a way, like the way it just kind of comes together. Like when I go and travel on a recording trip, like everything is easy. Like it's like the path like unfolds before me. You know what I mean? I land in New Orleans, for example, for my New Orleans episode. And I only had a plan to go to one place. And then I go there. It was like a museum. And then from there, the people there told me to go here. And then when I went there, the people there told me to go here. And then it was a whole weekend. And at the end of the weekend, I listened back to my audio and I'm like, oh my God, this is an amazing episode. Wow. You know, even my walking from one place to another, I'd usually walk by someone playing music, mm-hmm. like on the street. And I would tell them like, hey, I'm making a show. Like, is it cool? You know, I give you some money and you just keep playing and I use what your music on the show. Like, that's going to be the music between scenes. They're like, yeah, of course. What do you want me to play?
Oh. Wow.
You know, like the episode, I can't wait for people to hear that one. But the same thing happened in Benin. In Benin, everything was so easy. It was so, same thing in Cuba. Like, everything just comes together so well that I feel like this woman who I was on a tour with in Cuba, she said, like, that is the ancestors' way of telling you that this is a story you're meant to tell. And yeah, that's the only way I can describe it.
I have to second that. Repeat that phrase again.
Yeah, she said that's the ancestors' way of telling you that this is a story that you're meant to tell.
Yeah, that'll be the title of this podcast. That's the ancestors' way. Yes, because that just makes sense. Because the seamlessness of how everything just worked.
Yeah.
It just has to be.
Yeah, and that first episode is, I had so much fun making it, but I just feel like the episodes just keep getting better, you know? So
yeah.
Yeah, man. I think people are really gonna like that first one though. It's a good table setting of the problem. You know what I mean?
And you are the right guy to do this because I've heard your previous work and then knowing your ethic combined with this, it's not like you in this as some kind of tourist who's just like, ooh,
like a hustle, yeah.
Let me just show you, and bye, I'm on to something else. And no, yeah, this is something that you care about deeply.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So it makes sense that the ancestors are guiding you. And because I remember in the previous interview that we tried to do and everything was just, I used the wrong venue. That's why it didn't work out.
Mm.
You know, there was, when you told me how long it took you to get the interviews to, you know, the whole traveling and all that, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And this is the amount of stories you've collected. I was so impressed and I was like, yes, this man's onto something. But yeah. Let's dive into some of the things that stood out to you in your traveling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what reminded you of because you went to New Orleans, you went to Benin Republic, and you also traveled around to other parts of the United States, Cuba too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I actually just got back from Cuba last week.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
In the places that you've been to, what reminded you of, so keep Haiti separate, but what reminded you of Haiti in all the places that you've been to and said, oh, this is Haiti? And what reminded you of Benin Republic in the places that were in Benin Republic and said, wow, this is from the places that you've been?
Well, just now being in Cuba, man, I wish I could remember the name of the neighborhood we were in. But we were in this like pretty densely like Afro-Cuban populated neighborhood outside of Havana. And it felt just like walking around Port-au-Prince. Mm. Like it was like exactly the way people interacted with each other, the noise. Like it was, you know, hearing the roosters and stuff. Like it was just it was very much like Port-au-Prince. And the food also reminded me a lot of Port-au-Prince. And even in the practices that I've now know about voodoo, Haitian voodoo or voodoo in Santeria, there's so much that is almost the exact same. You know what I mean? Mm. Maybe slightly different names. So Cuba reminded me of Haiti a lot. And in Benin, I would say like, so I went to a ceremony in Benin and it was during the day, maybe like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, like the sun is out, it's hot. And there was, so the way the roles of the ceremony went is the men coordinated the actual ceremony, right?
Okay.
There was like the priests and there was dancing and there was like these things called zambetos that I explained in the pilot. They're all spinning on a courtyard. On the side are the children. And when you think about a voodoo ceremony, you don't think about children. The way they tell it to you, it's happening at night, and then there's blood and there's animal sacrifice and all this stuff. Man, these kids were having the best time of their life. Like, I can only compare it to a block party in the United States. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like a block, like I used to live in Bed-Stuy, like a block party in Bed-Stuy. Yeah. Like, it was like the kids were having the most fun. But easily, the kids were having the most fun. They're dancing, they're wearing costumes and stuff. They're having a great time. The women are in control of the music. So the women are also like, they're chatting with each other, laughing, and they're all drumming. And they're like stopping and singing a little bit, but mostly just drumming. So that was a transformative experience for me to be able to witness that and be there. And the whole community came out. Now, I say that because only maybe 4 months later, I'm in New Orleans. And the day I left New Orleans, I went to a ceremony in New Orleans. Now, there wasn't the gender and the kid breakups, right? It wasn't like everybody was drumming, men, women, and children. And their drumming, when I listen back, is exactly the same as the drumming in Benin. Like, wow. If I played you both, you wouldn't be able to tell me which one was which. If I paid you like a 5-second clip and I said, is this Benin, is this New Orleans, is this Benin, this New Orleans, is this, you'd probably get it wrong every time.
Fascinating. Wow.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And these people in New Orleans, I'm sure a couple of them, I mean, at that point I had been to Benin. I'm sure the majority never been to Africa, you know what I mean? But they're still drumming exactly the same as the drumming of the place that their ancestors were.
That 400 years. Beautiful. Yeah, that is beautiful. Wow. Music, because I've heard of music traveling through time. But it makes that scene of the scene in Sinners. That just popped in my head again. Like, man, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing.
Hey, wow.
And it was like there was somebody dancing there in New Orleans. And it's funny, like, in episode one, I'm talking to my mom, and she's telling me a story about a voodoo ceremony, and she's mimicking what the dancing was like at the ceremony she went to in Haiti maybe 40, 50 years ago. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So she's maybe even longer. So she's showing me what the dancing was like there. That is the same dancing I saw in Benin and would later be the same dancing in New Orleans. So that's three different countries.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's like, and I'm sure the listener, like, if you've seen, like, the way Africans dance, like a full body dance, like, you know what I mean? From your toes to your shoulders, everything is like, so like, it's just moving. So it's that I was already a Pan-African before I started working on this. I come into this Pan-African, but what the show has taught me more than anything is how spiritual of a people we are. How important our spirituality is. And that's why we believe so deeply in Christianity and Islam, right? It's like, whatever we do, we're going to do it to 10. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I forgot who it was I heard say, but it was like, you know, they gave us Christianity and then we became the best Christians. You know what I mean? Like, if you think of the person you know who is the most devout Christian, who lives by what the Bible says, you're probably thinking of an African. Probably an African woman is the most devout Christian you know.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's just crazy how that ends up being the case. And it might be the same case with Islam.
But it is the same with Islam. Everyone. You
know, but that's the thing, right? Is that our spirituality isn't compartmentalized. It is like I heard a phrase one time. It's actually a Muslim phrase, like taqwa. And it's basically like the light shines.
I've heard that word in a long time.
Yeah, your spirituality is supposed to, and listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I believe it is that your spirituality is supposed to shine in every part of your life in the way that the light shines through all the windows of a house into every room. You know what I mean? And I think the way we as Africans embrace spirituality is a great example of that, because it is in every part of our life.
Oh, I don't know what it means, but there's a Takwa Bay in Lagos.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. That's why I'm like, I don't
know. I mean, I probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it, I mean, you know.
My mind went there first, but I was like, oh, yo, Lagos is, the Western Nigeria, which is Yoruba, Muslim Yoruba, I won't say it's mainly, it's mostly Yoruba.
Cause it's I'm Yoruba, by the way,
Yeah.
I claim Yoruba, by the way.
Yeah, but that's, if you, there's a part of Yoruba that if I say it now, you're going to fight me. But but that's tied to Nigerian politics, so I won't say it out here. But there's by religion, Yoruba is majority Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not a surprise that the taqwa is tied to Islam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but it's part of the things that I've been finding out over, you know, especially since I started doing this podcast, like almost every Yoruba guest that I've had on the podcast, their name, I found out their name was Arabic. But it was based on pronouncing their name. You know, when you lived in Europe, you've lived in Yoruba land or Yoruba areas, the pronunciation of names, if you met a Yoruba, it's you pronounce the name with Yoruba tonations, and then you now find out, oh, it's an Arabic name, not a Yoruba name. And you're like, oh, man, I didn't know that. Until they tell you the meaning of their name, and it's like, oh, that name is, so it's actually an Arabic name. Oh, my. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Taqwa. So probably I was looking at Taqwa all these years as a Yoruba word, and then I just found out that it's Arabic. So
Yeah, I believe it to be. Yeah, I mean, the Middle East has done a number on Africa too, you know. It's not just Europe, but I mean, nothing compared to what Europe did. But hey, you know, the East African slave trade is also, you know.
Oh, yeah, there's that too. Yeah. But before we digress, when it comes to juju, as we call it in Nigeria, which I need to find out who has that word juju, because I asked people from different tribes in Nigeria, and everybody just knows it as juju. So, but juju does sound, I would say the word juju, I would give it to Yoruba. I'll give it to Yoruba because they had way before, you know, now we say Afrobeats with the S, but way before it was Afro juju, they had a genre of music, Afro juju, and they were one of the few people to embrace juju at that level, that there was actually a genre of music and people weren't like, oh my God, I'm scared of what the hell, you know? But that was quite popular, and it was madly popular. Like no matter how hot Afrobeats gets or is, there's nobody that has an album like Shino Peter's first album. You can literally dance to it from the beginning to the end of the tracks, from track one to the end. Like, you put that on, them aunties just gonna be dancing from beginning to the end. And he was one of the first guys to cross over to other, it wasn't just like Lagos or Western Nigeria, it crossed over to, because I was living in Benin City then, and we were dancing to it, and that was Afro Juju. Yeah, and that was like one of the first times I heard the word juju in a positive way, because Afro juju was the genre of music. And he got so big that the military government even, you know, brought him to concerts, and until he performed for Abacha at a concert during the time students were protesting Abacha, that's how he lost popularity, because he still, in a way, apologizes for that. But now I think many of the Afrobeats generation don't know, I think they're okay with him now, but it took a long time for him to regain that popularity. But it was a big deal back then when he still performed under Abacha. But I understand, because that man was killing people. He said he could defeat France in a war, but people don't understand what it means to live under a dictator. But I digress. So that guy helped make it acceptable to hear the word juju. And so he deserves his credit, because it's something that you don't think about until now. We're having a conversation like this. And that's one way for me to throw the question to you, that do you think if Haiti had a version of an Afro juju or a music genre or a musician in the form of Sashino Peters, like in the 90s, who came out, with an album as hot as Sashino Peters. I need to remember the, what's the album called again? Because I remember one time I was with a Nigerian in his car, and I brought up Sashino Peters' album, and that guy, I lit up, and he's from my region, not from the West. And he was like, man, that album, yep, he's a few years older than I am, but he was like, yes, from beginning to the end, that's just dance, 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 dance. It's a party. Mm. It was hot. So do you think Voodoo could benefit from an artist? Because today, we can't deny it. Pop culture helps move the conversation to positive or negative.
Absolutely.
So could Voodoo benefit from an artist like that doing something similar?
100%. I mean, because culture knows no borders. Culture knows, like, especially a song or something like that can be all around the world in half a second because of the internet,
Yes.
So absolutely, I think it could benefit from that. And I think every artist, that's part of what I'm doing with this show, is that I think it's every artist's job to kind of take on those types of subjects and give it to a mass audience. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I've worked on a lot of podcasts, a lot of episodes about a lot of things, but the episodes that feed my spirit the most are episodes that I know African people can take and learn something from. Nothing feels better. Like anytime anything I do gets back to Africa, like there was a couple that emailed in on the last show I was working on, the Atlas Obscura podcast. They emailed in and said that they honeymooned across Africa and they went to places based off places that I did episodes about.
Wow.
So they got to have some pretty good money to do that. But but that was amazing to know, Because at that point I'd already done episodes in Nigeria, I did episodes in Ghana, I did episodes in South Africa and Kenya, and like Egypt, of course. Just being able to know, like, oh wow, they went to these African countries and spent their money, That made me feel a little bit, that made me feel nice. So I think about that every time I set out to work on, especially this project. Not to be dramatic, this is like my life's work, like the Voodoo project right now. There's every part of me is in this show. My sense of humor, my kind of like scholarly focus, of course. My family is in it to some extent. Yeah.
I enjoyed when you were, every time I played when you were talking with your mom, that just gave me idea. That gave me so many ideas to talk with my own mom. And
I'm not even done talking to her. I'm gonna talk to my mom a few more times because it was so great. I didn't think it was gonna be like that. I literally went over there to talk to her. This is all in the pilot episode, by the way, if anybody listening. When I went over there to talk to her, I was prepared for her to shut me down. I just was like, even if she shuts me down, let me record it. You know what I mean? That was my thinking. I'm just going to get shut down, record it, and say, why won't you talk about this? And she'll say, because I don't want to talk about it. I thought that was it. But she really sat there, and I only used a few minutes of the conversation. Maybe one day as like a bonus episode, I'll just release the whole conversation. But yeah, man, like for any, for any Africans now who are, having children now or have children, that if they could listen to this show and then just be different with their kids. When their kids are like, hey, dad, what's Voodoo? You tell them, hey, it's African spirituality, and
that's it.
Some people believe in it. Some people believe in this. Some people believe in that. But you respect whatever people believe in because it's their right to believe in it. Mm-hmm. No one wants to believe something as natural and as pure as Voodoo or Vodou and be believed to be a devil worshiper. Could you imagine? There's so many people I've talked to on this show that are some of the, and that's one of my favorite things about the show is that you're gonna hear so many. The way you love my conversation with my mom, I talk to so many people that are so nice, so funny, like the greatest people you'll ever hear on a podcast, and they all practice Voodoo or they practice Santeria or they practice Candomblé, they practice something. And because of their practice, people think they're devil worshippers. Now, imagine being such a kind person. And people think you are a devil worshiper. You're a goofy guy. Like, and people think you go home and you worship Satan. Or mm-hmm. how about this? You also have a... There's a way that in Vodou, you know, you don't gain anything from converting somebody else.
Mm.
You know, like that's the thing about Christianity and Islam. Both entered Africa, at least Christianity will say West Africa. Of course, you know, there's the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, separate thing. Most and black people.
And the Coptic too.
Yeah.
In Egypt.
But most, exactly. But most Africans in the West, when you tell them that Christianity is a European export, they'll say, oh, no, like Africans, but you guys are not practicing the, you know what I mean? That East or Northeast African version of Christianity. This version, Jesus is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed man. And to the people who say that that doesn't matter, I want you to go into a church and change Jesus to a black Jesus and see how the congregation is going to react. Anyway, I say all that to say, Christianity and Islam entered Africa largely as conquering forces, yes. right? Now, whether or not people want to be Christian or Muslim, it's their business. You know what I mean? I don't judge anybody. I think that's fine. But let's be honest about how I got there. So Christianity and Islam enter as conquering forces, especially because the idea of converting somebody is a way to say you're almost civilizing them. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, in a spiritual system like Vodou, the belief is that everyone has their unique connection to God. We are all a part of the spiritual universe. Whether you know Vodou exists or not, you're a part of it. You know what I mean? There isn't a chosen people. The people who are Vodou practitioners are not better than someone who thinks Vodou's the devil. You know what I mean? God does not... He's not partial. You know what I mean? God made you and God made Mount Everest. He made the Pacific Ocean and he made the sharks in the water. And the sharks in the water don't practice voodoo either. Don't worry. You know, but it's all a part of the same thing. And so because Vodou isn't out to seek converts, it kind of is seen as like almost crazy for that. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, wow.
Touching on something that it's resonating with me in a way that I didn't expect it to, because now I'm connecting certain dots that I had been missing, because family members that I knew or I came across who practiced juju or let me try if I can say your Haitian way of Vodou. Did I get it? I've been
trying Vodou, to yeah.
Vodou. Yeah. I'm trying to say it in my head. I've been trying to say it in my head in your exact accent. None of them tried to convert me. And this was at the height of when everybody who was Christian around me was always pushing this convert. And when I was 17, going 18, you know, I made friends with my first, I believe they were they Buddhist or Confucius? Confucius. Is it Confucius or Confucius? They were from Sri Lanka. The first Sri Lankans that I made friends with, I was living in Ibadan. And one of them, he used to have a ponytail, and one day he lost his ponytail when he came to my house. We're all around the same age, but he was a little bit taller than myself. And my guardian was like, oh, you brought a girl to the house. And you know, there was a whole thing about if you bring girls, you're already committing adultery. You can't talk to a girl. Adultery. I'm like, or fornication. Always, I got hit with both of them at the same time. Although technically adultery is supposed to be for married people, but hey, I got hit with both. Mm. And I was like, oh, no, that's a boy. Just because he didn't have his ponytail up, or the hair is like mad long. It's part of his religion. It's like, what religion? It's not a Christian? Like, no, he practices a different religion. So he's a Muslim? No, it's like, it's not actually, he's the first Christian and Muslim friend that I have, because I'm trying to. It was a different religion, so I'm like, wow. He wasn't trying to convert me. He didn't approach it like that. It was just cool.
Yeah, and absolutely.
The first thing was, so are you bringing him to church? We have service this evening. I was like, damn. This is why I didn't want him to come to my house, because.
Yeah. But now you have to do the work of, yeah, now your place is like, oh, are you going to convert him? You have to convert him. You know the way.
I'm like, okay. Yeah. I'll talk to him. You haven't talked to him? And she just went and started bringing, we have service this evening. I was like, damn, man, this is going to be hard for this guy now to see me as a friend. He's going to feel, man.
He's going to feel judged. Yeah. He's going to feel all the worst feelings. Yeah.
Oh, boy, he just like, okay. I have my own religion. Thank you. It's like, but you don't know God. What do you mean? He don't know God.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to say something about that too, is that like, and this is kind of this is one of the sadder things I've learned or realized in my research, is that like, when you tell somebody you're going to strengthen your relationship with God or you're going to find God, the assumption is, the normative is, you are going to become a Christian. Because as African people in mass, especially in the West, we have given the monopoly of God to Europe. Europe owns God. So if you say, no, I practice Vodou, and in Vodou, not me personally, but like if you just say, like, in Vodou, there is one God who made the world, and he just doesn't care if Chelsea wins a game or not. You know, he doesn't care about the petty problems of the world. He makes the world and he goes off making another world and leaves the ruling of the world to these, for lack of a better term, like saints, right? In Haitian Vodou, they're called Loi. Okay. So this idea that God is owned by the West and by the Abrahamic religions is so problematic, because as a human being, you should feel as connected to a grain of sand as you do to the cosmos. You know what I mean? Like, you were created divinely by the Creator. And once you feel like the Creator was brought to you, and instead of you having a distinct connection to the Creator, right? Because the Creator was already in Nigeria before a white man ever stepped foot in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But if that Creator looks Italian, then how can I say there was the Creator been to Nigeria? You know what I mean? Because when people came to Nigeria and decided to build up all these churches and force Nigerians who, you know, people at the time, whether it be the Benin kingdom or, you know, not obviously it wasn't Nigeria yet.
Yeah.
But when the Portuguese and the Dutch and the British went to that area and, you know, forced converts into Christianity, they weren't acting holy. Right? Is that how God would introduce himself to you, his greatest creation? You know, like, is that does that make sense, you know, for us to believe, like, you know, we went through this horrible thing and, you know, Christianity was a part of that, of course, and religion in general. Same thing with the East African slave trade. But you know what? Now, you know, white Jesus and, you know, the Catholic Church, they have my best interests. They have my best interests now. After all that, now they have my best interest. The King James version of Bob Marley said, you know, King James didn't write his version of the Bible to benefit the African man. Why would he?
He didn't? What?
You know what I mean? Like, so I don't criticize people for wanting to be Christian or Muslim. You know what I mean? Whatever works for you, whatever helps you find peace, I'm down for. It is the forcing religion on anyone is when I start to criticize. I say, hey, you know what I mean? If your connection with God is so good, why are he forcing you to do this?
Exactly.
You know, like, it's because one thing in my travels across now 4 or 5 countries, you know, over a dozen cities learning about Vodou. No one has ever forced me to say or believe anything. They don't even ask me if I practice Vodou. Why are we having this conversation? While we're talking, while I'm talking to a priest in Cuba, while I'm talking to a priest in Benin, they're not even saying, well, wait, are you? They just know I'm a curious reporter, and they are being as open and honest as they can be with me. If I said to you, Raf, I'm about to do an audio documentary on Christianity, and I'm going to go fly around the country and I'm going to go talk to priests, you would bet in that audio, them priests are going to baptize me. They're going to say, hey, you know what? Like you've accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. You've done that. Okay. All right. Great. So now we need to, like, they would never allow it to just stay philosophical and talk about the world. It's like, oh, well, you're going to be damned to burn in hell if you don't accept this right now. Let's, you know what I mean? Let's get you accepting this right now. And I haven't had that experience at all in this. And it is powerful.
Well, to be fair, I do know of some Catholic priests that won't get promoted. I guess that's why they won't get promoted. But I like to think they've hung out around. Now it's making sense why they do sound like that. But they do sound similar to the juju or voodoo priests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing about what I say when I don't criticize people on the basis of being Christian or Muslim, because I believe there's some very cool Christians and Muslims, you know what I mean? And
I've met like a taxi driver, Uber driver, who I once had a great conversation with. I always chat with drivers, and he was like, you would have made a great Muslim, my brother. You would have made a great Muslim. Yeah. But, you know, there's a reason why many Muslims don't like me. And I was like, so many Muslims aren't like you. Are you saying I would have made a great Muslim? And we are agreeing on a lot of points right now. I don't know if I would have made a great Muslim.
Yeah, he's not. He might not be the person. Well, he might be, though. I don't know. I might like him.
He was making a lot of philosophical points, but he was also very critical of Muslim leaders who he felt were still stuck in the like 15th century, in his opinion. But the way he made the point wasn't like the way many people talk on social media. He was an older gentleman, and it was so beautiful hearing this man talk. I wish I hadn't thought about podcasting then, so I didn't write his name down or anything. But I wish I had his name. You would have loved to talk to this gentleman. But it's rare to meet such people, and I was like, damn, I always think about him every once in a while. But before I get carried away, there's something I wanted to read to you. So my people, we have never been one central kingdom type of people. We are more like city-states. Everybody was kind of on his own.
Okay.
So when it comes to juju or voodoo, everybody seems to have their own thing going on.
Yeah.
So one of my uncles who was willing to talk about wasn't like, oh my God, with this boy, what are you talking about? He sent me a few things. And although he mixed all of them up, but he was, so my ancestral village is called Agbere. Or Agbere, if I'm going in an American accent, it's A-G-B-E-R-E. So he says our juju in voodoo in Agbere is called Oru. So that's for voodoo, we call it Oru. And we have a specific word for it tied to our village itself, which is Agbere Gbesa. And I just found out that what I've been calling my totem is actually not mine. It's a bigger village next to ours. He said that's what worships the monitor lizard. So I have to take off the monitor lizard that I've been hanging around me, because, well, my elder sister told me that monitor lizard was our family's, our village, sacred animal all these years. And now the head of my family says it's not. So, but he says, though there's a story behind the monitor lizard being worshipped, I will confirm. And I've been waiting for that confirmation for over how many months now? Still hasn't confirmed. But he said, we are water people. I think I've told you that before. We are riverine people mostly. the guys who are by the coast, ocean, also, coastal people. But we are around water a lot. He said, in regards to his personal experience, he's never been a worshiper or got himself involved. But Ijaws, which is my tribe, Ijaws have a strong belief system in the Oru.
Mm.
And when he was a teenager, he had an issue with his school principal when he was in high school. He accused him wrongly and unfairly, knowing that he may not be able to defend himself. All he did was capitalize on their belief system and decided to invoke the gods, Oru. Right in the presence of the disciplinary staff, as I started, they rushed and stopped me. That was how the matter ended. The truth of it is that I don't even know how I did it. At the end of the day, the disciplinary committee have to apologize to me, and he put a laughing emoji. So I'm like, is this how you admitted to getting out of trouble in school?
Mm.
Over 50 years ago? So you knew enough to just say, hey, y'all accused me of something I didn't do, and y'all want to discipline me, or you don't want to go face my grandfather at home, because he was a policeman. So that meant you kept the when you come home now, that's big trouble. So I'm just gonna invoke the gods. How dare you? The gods are I'm like, man, my grandfather was a Catholic man, man. And that's why my mom is a hardcore, staunch Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, because she should have aborted me. That's why she never did that. But because she said, that's all I'm a Catholic. Mm. So, my man invoked the gods immediately. He was like, man, I'd rather, whatever you guys going to do, the gods are my witness. Oru, Oru. And they're like, shh, hey, man, hey, man. Hey. You know what? We believe you, boy. We believe you. Because the guilty guy won't do this. I said, bro, over 50 years now, you're admitting.
He lied on the gods. It's crazy. Like, I mean, more power to him, I guess. You know,
I said, bro, all I asked was about juju. You gonna, hey, dude, give me more information about this man here admitting to.
Yeah. Hey, man. Yeah,
but the story is coming up, man. The story is coming up.
Yeah.
But for some, it's over 50 years. But yeah, Agbere Bisa. I have to.
There's a lot of those stories amongst us as a people. Like, even in my own family, there's still so many more that I'm, you know, asking questions about. And that's one of the things as one of the markers of success of the show, and it's already happening, is people, like you told me earlier, you want to have a conversation with your mom and stuff like that. Like, is being able to go back and have those conversations, because that generation before us, they're not here forever. You know what I mean?
So that's like, right.
If we let them go one of my biggest regrets, my grandmother passed away. My mom's mom passed away when I was in the eighth grade. And sometimes, like, you couldn't give me an amount too high to have a conversation with her. If I could talk to her today.
Yeah.
It would be like, because at the time, you know, I'm a kid. I'm in middle school. You know what I mean? So, like, I talked to her about, like, you know, stupid stuff. Like, I never really asked her questions about, like the Haiti. Her mom, my great-grandmother, died at almost like 107, 108 years old.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Here's a picture of how close Haitians are to Africa. The Haitian Revolution was in 1804. Yes. We won the revolution January 1st, 1804. It started in 1791. So Africans stopped being brought to Haiti around that time, around that, you know, 13 years. They would call them saltwater Africans. You know what I mean? Like, at that point, Haiti was cut off from new Africans coming.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandmother was born in, I believe, the 1870s. 1870s, 1880s. She, before she died, would help take care of my oldest brother, right? When my great-grandmother was a child, she met Africans born in Africa who were brought to Haiti through the slave trade. Wow. You know what I'm saying? You see the connect? Like, those Africans to my brother both knew the same person. You know what I mean? Like, that is it's really not that long ago. And of course, I mean, my great grandmother lived an insane amount of time, 107 years old. She lived a long life. a very, very long life and was active for a very long time. But the fact that when she was a baby, she met Africans who were brought to Haiti from the slave trade. And then she was able to take care of my brother, who was just born in 1979. He was just born, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
my brother, he's not an old man, you know what I mean? So it's crazy.
It is. That's why I tell people, like, you know, I have a fellow podcaster, a mutual friend of ours, who also a big listener of this podcast, a sister from Zambia. Yeah, she was able to do it on her last visit to Zambia. She got to record her grandmother.
Amazing.
And yeah, it doesn't mean you have to be a podcaster to do this, you know, to everyone listening. Collect the stories, man. Collect the stories. Have it for yourself. Even if you don't have kids, it's part of your family's history. Keep it.
Absolutely.
And have it on vinyl. Put it on vinyl, you know.
Whatever.
But it's part of your history. It's part of you. And it's part of your future.
And imagine how much you would want. Like, think of all these podcasts and everything we're recording. Like, my son is 16 months old. His kids are going to be able to find my podcast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I could be gone by then, but they're like, this is my grandfather talking. Like, this is the kind of stuff my grandfather used to talk about. This is his voice. This is his, you know what I mean? This is what he's interested in. They don't even have to ask my son, well, what was granddaddy like? They could go find out on the internet what granddaddy
was. That's another thing. Yeah.
It's going to be there forever. You know what I mean? So I think just getting as many of those stories, even if we don't release them into the world, keep them on a hard drive.
That's right.
And keep that hard drive. And one day, you know, when your kids are older, play it for them. Like, hey, this my interview with your great-grandmother, you know?
Oh, yeah.
My great-grandmother lived through a U.S. blockade of Haiti, you know what I mean, when she was born. My grandmother was born in U.S.-occupied Haiti, the U.S.-occupied Haiti from 1915 to 1935. Till today, the U.S. occupies Haiti. The U.S., if you could pick the president of a country, you occupy the country. So from 1915 to today, my grandmother's whole life was in a U.S. occupied country. She, my grandmother was born in, I believe, 1924. So they all saw different Haitis. The Haiti I see today versus my mom's Haiti, my grandmother's Haiti, my great-grandmother's Haiti. Like, if I could combine those stories, you know what I mean? Like, and like I said, I don't have access to my great-grandmother or my grandmother, but I have access to my mom. So it's like, I'm just going to ask her as much as I can. And I'm going to talk as much as I can. And, you know, who knows? One day my son might take the Voodoo Project and use that audio to create another show.
Hey, this kids, you know, tomorrow I'm going to interview my kid. She said every year we got to do one interview. So I got to go interview her. I don't know what
that's amazing. Goes, but that's amazing. That's a great idea, by the way. I think I'm going to steal that idea, actually. I think I'm going to do the same thing with my son. Once my son starts talking, I'm going to interview him every year.
Do it. They do their thing. And I'm like, all right.
How old is she?
7. The first one we did, when she turned 5, we interviewed for the first time. And then she said, this year, right around her birthday, she said, I want to be interviewed every year around after my birthday. I want to go to the studio and
get interviewed. That's amazing. I can't wait to do that with my son. I'm gonna do it.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that, but
amazing.
She just said, I want to go to the studio. I like going to the studio. Because sometimes in the house, you just bring a mic, grab one mic and come and say, I'm on the news now and I have this man here. So what happened? What do you mean what happened? Yeah, you're on the news. Is this how you're going to talk? You don't even watch the news. Okay. All right.
Amazing.
Okay. So she's interviewing me already. So, but the first time she was in the studio, she was like, oh, when was our time to talk now? I was like, okay.
That's amazing. But,
yeah. So we're going to make it an annual thing of going to the studio. And I get to see somebody grow over the years. I'm looking forward to teenage years. See
how that come. Yeah. One day, maybe when she's like, you know, 18, you can like edit it. You know what I mean?
That'll be,
you know, it's like a graduation gift to her or something. Or like, you know what I mean? Play how she's changed throughout the years. And her voice is going to change so much. And
That'll be fun. Oh, man. Being a dad, one of the greatest journeys.
The greatest.
All right. Yeah. So One day, I think one day I will compile a bunch of the texts that I received. Some people sent me audio messages, but they were scared because I tried to set up a meeting between one of them. And I'm like, dude, it's just a conversation. It's not a recording we're going to do. But yeah. he got scared. I'm like, no, it's not a scary place. This is... Let's say,
oh, because of me.
Now, I don't think it's because of you. He's still one of those who might be scared of voodoo.
Yeah, no, I know, not me, but like, yeah, because of the topic. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, come on, we have once you. I told him to listen to the pilot of Voodoo. You know, I sent him. I tried to make him laugh. You know, yeah. I like make people laugh, and then if you still don't want to talk about it, all right, that's fine. But he kept going. Every example he picked seemed to remind me of the Nigerian, current Nigeria's coach, who's from Mali, by the way.
Mm.
And the way he went on about Nigeria didn't qualify for the World Cup because of voodoo. I said, man, get out of here. This is one of the worst Nigerian teams. That's why they didn't qualify for the World Cup.
That's the thing, too, is that a lot of times with voodoo or, you know, whatever, all African spiritual systems. When something bad happens, it's because of voodoo, right?
Yeah.
Something good happens, it's you know, just something good was going to happen. But if that person was a Christian, something bad happens, then it's God's plan.
Hey, stop blaming Drake. God. That's when they know Drake all of a sudden. But you know, my counter to that, whenever we're having a wedding or a funeral or a big event, especially when you grow up in Benin City, who do you always have or who do you call? You always call the guy who can stop the rain.
Yeah.
You always hire that guy. He's not a Christian. He's not a Muslim. He ain't from one of the popular religions. He's somebody who other people refer to as a juju man.
Mm.
But his specialty is in stopping the rain. His claim to fame is that he can hold the rain. And people always pay money to that guy. You know, I've seen Christians do it. I've seen Muslims do it.
Yeah.
Everybody pays. So why do you all... I want good weather on my... Okay, but you're willing to pay money on that day. Does it always work? Yeah. But I've seen... Well, as far as soon as it works, hey. But nobody says, good weather. Yeah, I thank... You're not going to shout you praise for that guy. But when it doesn't work, then I knew it. He's a fraud.
Yeah.
But you paid money.
Yes. Because you believed. Yeah.
You paid money. So just come on, people. It's like back to that saying when you're on your deathbed. I know people who were on their deathbed and when everything was like, oh my God, it looks like I'm going to die, man. And somebody says, there's one body here, people swear by the person, made one green concussion. You don't know what's in it. I'm not telling you to go drink something that you don't know. I'm here telling you to do that because not everybody's a good faith actor. So, but I've seen people, they were like, even going as far as to Togo. I know people who did that because they refused to get a proper diagnosis. For some, that was just a simple thing. Go get a proper diagnosis. No. And that thing came, you don't know where it came from. But the thing is, they believed at that moment, this will save me. And they drank it.
Yeah.
As soon as they recovered, we don't know if that's what worked or not.
Mm.
So, but if you die, then, that man killed me.
Yeah.
So,
I've heard it all at this point.
This project is a project that everyone should be on. We need it in schools, and we need need people with talent. We need a Ryan Coogler, not only Ryan Coogler, but we need the Ryan Cooglers. Using Ryan Coogler as the main name because he's the most popular, and I love his movies too.
For sure. Yeah.
But we need people with his way of thinking to make movies that bring voodoo to the light and show people that, you know, just like it's like when I used to be scared of masquerades back home, you know. And there was a time I encountered a masquerade. I think it was in Lagos. Was that Lagos or Port Harcourt? There are masquerades that will flog you. They give you the warning. You know, that's why I sent you. I think I sent you a video of the state governor banning the masquerade. I was like, they're harassing people. They don't harass people. They give you warnings that this masquerade comes out at certain hours. You're not supposed to be in the public. It's a thing with like I said, in even my ethnic group, each city is different. Each town is different with their own thing. They have their own thing.
Yeah.
But people now in this age of social media, the internet, a lot of misinformation is out there. Disinformation is out there. It's unfortunate. Same thing with masquerades. Everybody had stories. Hey, this masquerade, if you see a woman, it's going to rip the woman's clothes out. Hey, this and that. And I happened to be somewhere I wasn't supposed to. Well, I was passing through. Not like I wasn't supposed to be there, but I was passing through. And a masquerade came up. Some of the masquerades, you need to confront them. Mm. And one came at me and the guy raised and I said, if you touch me, man, I will slap you. And hey. the guy had the thing and he was dancing around me. But some of it is you also be like, hey, look, man, you acknowledge the masquerade too. And you give it something. You give the gift. But man, I was broke. I was broke that day. Yeah. Mom was broke and I was hungry. The masquerade could tear. But if you saw my photo then, I was mad skinny. So it was a different person you were seeing. Man looked like, hey, this guy was on his last breath. He had nothing. So the masquerades are not idiots. The thing came and danced. He danced around me, raised his whip like it was really faked, like it was going. And then I could have gone home and said, this masquerade tore my shirt and all that. Nothing. Yeah. But I just said, hey, if you touch me, I'll slap you. But meanwhile, if you look at the person who was threatening to slap you, you'll be like, man, this guy, if he touches his masquerade, he's going to hit my pass out. Who's watching who? So, no, every community has their masquerades. They have their thing. Why do you just move to the drastic? Mm. Catholic priests have been impregnating children all these years. They've been communities celebrate it. There's nobody banning any Catholic, all the imams, all this. Everybody is doing some wild stuff.
If Voodoo, in all its forms, from Benin to Haiti to Cuba, had the blood on its hands that we know specifically, I could say Christianity has, it would be... We would hear about it every day. We would hear. If there were massacres in the name of, if Christians were being harmed, if, you know, Voodoo endorsed the transatlantic slave trade, you know what I mean? If it was, if those kind of things were on the jacket of Voodoo, we wouldn't even be able to have this conversation. It would be outlawed to speak on it. You know what I mean?
So I agree.
And like you said about the priests as well, you know, but hey,
I agree. And quick things before I wrap up. I know the most interactions I had with voodoo practitioners, they were amongst the first queer-friendly people that I also knew because they are not trying to convert you. But I was too young to understand these things back then because I was under that convert anybody you see. And it was like competition between Christians and Muslims. And I also know a lot of atrocities committed by Muslims. My interactions in Nigeria. So that's why I can speak on both. But just that understanding to let people be and give people the freedom to breathe. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it's one thing that would make me always appreciate our voodoo, juju, Oru people and why they will always have a high place in my heart. And one of the biggest misconceptions, in fact, disinformation that has been used to attack juju people in especially like Nigeria, is ritual killings. Any Nigerian listening knows what I'm talking about. It has been so weaponized that, you know, like the masquerades, there's always somebody who's caught once in a while. It's like our version of serial killers. It's actually not a serial killer. It's a cabal. It's like an organized crime thing. You target the poorest people and you kill them. But once in a while, the police will show up with, oh, this guy who's like a juju man. We found him with so many skulls. He's like a serial killer. He's not. It's actually like, it's the fastest way or the quickest way to do organ harvesting. If you want to do something like that, how do you go through a business like that without the streets knowing, without the public keeping an eye on you, you spread word out like ritual killing. We are killing people and taking we are going after people, and you put a fear and say it's tied to voodoo, and people start freaking out. Meanwhile, you're just harvesting organs and selling it in the black market. And people can't put to it, but an investigative journalist revealed this a couple of years ago on Twitter.
That actually had nothing to do with...
That this was a black market thing. And that's when I put two and two together. I was like, this makes more sense than... Yeah. It was the logic. And that's why I was very happy that you brought up the non-conversion thing. Because if you were into converting people, why would you now go and be killing people? It doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't.
But if you need something to be your punching bag, hey, they are the ones killing people. They're killing people. They will be afraid. And
all of us. And it just so happens that they are the most, in their spiritual system, the most African. You know what I mean?
So it's so easy for us to be afraid of them. Yeah. And every once in a while, you know, it's like the cabal is easily sacrifices one of their soldiers. Because we never really know what happens to the guys who always they capture with like 20 skulls in a bag. It's so weird how they always catch one person. Like, oh, this guy had 50 skulls. And he would just be telling him some weird stories. Oh, it was for rituals. It's for people who I wanted to make rich. Who did you make rich? By doing sacrifices. You can't show us 10 people who became millionaires. No. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't. No. But it goes on the newspapers, be on the front pages. And we just love them stories. And then, but who did they make a billionaire? You can't show us.
No,
it doesn't work like that.
It's all propaganda.
But if you're selling organs, you're just grabbing poor people who nobody cares about until by mistake you grab somebody who you weren't supposed to grab, and then the police might activate, and then, go grab. Okay, then let this, you go. We will sacrifice you. And then you're caught by the police. So that was one way we always demonized voodoo practitioners, and that's why we always look down on them. Because when I talk to people and say, hey, tell me some story, somebody's like, hey, I don't want something to happen to me. I don't want my organ to disappear. That's why people hold that fear. That's one reason why we have that fear. So thank you again for coming on this episode. It went a little bit longer than I planned, but we'll do more episodes, and we got to have an episode for Haiti winning the World Cup.
Yes, absolutely. Haiti, I'll be back. We'll do a live stream of that game.
Oh, live stream. Yes, that's one we're definitely doing live stream for.
Yeah.
Haiti beating everybody. We are Team Haiti here and Team Africa at the World Cup, and Brazil too, because you know me, that's I love Brazil. Like, do you have any plans to go to Brazil? Because there's some stuff happening there too, tied to
football. No. The idea was I was either going to go to Cuba or Brazil. So I went to Cuba.
Okay. All right. So, final question. I didn't ask about food or music this time, but that's good. We'll do that next time. What would you like to leave the audience with?
I would say don't be scared of yourself. You know, voodoo and voodoo, they're not the same exactly. Like New Orleans voodoo, Haitian voodoo, and Benin voodoon, you know what I mean? It's all basically comes from the same source. Slight variations depending on where it went. But my point is that spiritual system was made and it persevered because our ancestors needed something to hold on to, you know, at a time of great suffering. We aren't suffering like they were, but we are suffering, you know what I mean? And answers that haven't been made clear by the spiritual systems that we've chosen, or not, maybe not that we've chosen, but that were handed to us.
Yes.
And the point of the Voodoo Project isn't to get people to practice voodoo. I'm not initiated, you know, so...
Neither am I.
Not necessarily that you need to be initiated, but like, for the record, the point of the show isn't to get people to practice. It's people to get people to respect what voodoo is. You know what I mean? In the same way, you got a Muslim friend, you're not thinking about, man, I wonder what he's doing at home. I wonder if he's killing anybody at home. You know what I mean? And if you did that, people would know, oh, yeah, Islamophobic. If your friend is Jewish and you're talking that way, oh, he's anti-Semitic. But if your friend practices voodoo, you could make up all this stuff about him.
Yeah, what do we call that? What, anti-what?
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's easy to disrespect.
What's the phrase for that?
Because it's really anti-African is really what it is.
That's right.
So, you know, I think that that's just something that people got to... listen to the pilot. Follow me on this on this journey, and we'll get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, and where can people find the rest of your work?
Well, I'm making it now. The series isn't done yet, but okay. I'm seeking funding to finish the series. So I'm having conversations with companies and whatnot and schools to secure funding. But my goal is for it to come out towards the end of this year. Yeah, but we'll see, you know. So anyway, Roth, it's been a pleasure, my man.
Hey, thank you, my brother.
Yeah, this ain't the last time. This ain't even close to the last time. We're going to do this much more times.
So we got plenty more.
Yeah, plenty more. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the next time already. And yeah, man, take care, my brother.
Hey, well, last thing, who's winning the AFCON for you? It's the most difficult tournament. Even more difficult than the World Cup to predict a winner. So put you on the spot.
Congo.
Oh, that's a good pick. That's a good pick. All right. DR Congo. I send this to my Congolese people. Yeah. Congolese people, go and provide funding for this project to happen. You hear that now?
Yeah, man.
Support. All right.
All right, Rob.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the privilege of your company. I'll see you at the next episode. Happy holidays.
Take care, brother.
Thanks for listening to White Label American. If you enjoy the show, please give a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. You can follow the show on all social media platforms. Visit the White Label American website for links for donations, episodes, feedback, guests, merch, and newsletter. Don't forget to download the free White Label American app on the Google Play Store and Apple coming soon. Thank you for the privilege of your company.